Alrighty then, here we go. Welcome to Connections on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Bill Newell, Josh Arnold, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and we have another eclectic lineup scheduled for you today with lots of information from all around the North Shore. We try to do this on Tuesdays and Thursdays here on MSO with our live streaming audio from 10 to 11, and we add and subtract from the broadcast as we go along in terms of what's left over and when we post this. As we mentioned here this morning, as we try to bring you the latest information about the virus, of course, on the North Shore, and maybe some other events too, and maybe sprinkle in some good news here and there, hopefully. I just saw a video Bill posted it. In fact, I saw it last night. It's right on North Shore Today, I believe, or is it on this post? Yeah, it's on North Shore Today. And if you go to that post, North Shore Today, down at the bottom, you'll see John Kassian has a broadcast called Some Good News. And it really does have some good news in it. Very, very nice. And you got to wait for the surprise ending. you just have to. So that's just one of the things that we have up on our website today. And, of course, all kinds of other information and interviews as well. But, as I said, we'll be starting off with our interview coming up in just a minute, as Bill Newell will be kicking things off with the Salem News reporter Paul Layton. Of course, Paul, a longtime friend and a longtime reporter for the Salem News, with plenty of information, I am sure. Then we'll go to a couple of other interviews, I think. I'm not sure of the exact order this morning, but we will be talking with Kate Fox of Destination Salem. She'll bring us up to speed as to what is working and what is closed in Salem. We'll talk with Sarah Bartley. She is a director of community input, impact, excuse me, director of community impact at United Way, Massachusetts Bay, and Merrimack Valley. There we go, we got that out. And we'll talk with her about the work that they're doing, the United Way is doing here on the North Shore. And then later on, Josh Arnold will be talking with old friend Afroz Khan. She's a Newburyport City Councilor, and we'll get the latest from what's going on up there. In between, of course, we're going to be talking with Bill and with Josh as we move along here. And I'm going to take a break here and see if the boys are ready to do that now or if we're going to get right to our interviews. So stay with us, and we have, I think, a rather interesting hour here on MSO. Okay, so hold on. We'll be right back.
MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Like Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury, the Bradford Tavern in Rowley. Just like us, they care about the North Shore. Check out all of our podcasts and share our website with your friends. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Again, we are your connection to the best of the North Shore. msonewsports.com. This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and Patio Doors offer natural wood interiors, low maintenance line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
I'm Bob Gillis, president of Cape Ann Savings Bank, serving the Cape Ann community with stability and commitment for over 170 years. Since 1846, our customers have relied on our local bank service and big bank benefits. Stop by our offices or call to talk about your banking needs at 978-283-0246. Built on community, CapeAnnSavings.bank.
Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester. Now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
Salem News reporter Paul Layton is joining us on the line. Paul, welcome. Good to be talking with you in these times.
Yes, thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me on again. I really appreciate it.
Paul, these are kind of crazy times. Big picture wise, how are things in the reporting business? Are you able to make these adjustments?
Yeah, I think it's going okay considering the circumstances. You know, we're all pretty much working from home. I've been working home exclusively for the last couple of weeks, and most of the other reporters are, like a lot of places. We have one of those Zoom meetings in the morning where we are, and then we do our reporting basically from our home, which does make it a little more difficult. We're so used to in this getting out and talking to people, and we haven't really been doing that much at all. So like everybody else, it's different, strange, it's unsettling, but we still have a job to do, and we're trying to do it as best we can.
No, the papers have been really providing a lot of great information out there. So, Paul, it's funny, I was listening to the governor's press conferences, and he's talking about nursing homes, and I'm thinking, okay, good idea, it sounds like a great idea. Then I read Paul Layton's Salem News story last week on nursing homes, and Paul Lanzikos, Elder Affairs Secretary, has some concerns about that and about moving patients and so on. And I guess it was the redistribution or reuse of these facilities, so to speak, or if needed. So maybe share a little information on that. You've done a lot of work on that in the last few weeks.
Right. I spoke with Paul Lanzikos, who, as you said, he's from Beverly, and he ran North Shore Elder Services for years, and he used to be the Secretary of Elder Affairs under Governor Dukakis, so he has a lot of experience in this field. He's really concerned about this idea he acknowledges that it's all with good intentions, and everybody's trying to do the best they can under these circumstances. But there's this idea to move nursing home patients from some nursing homes in order to open up the facilities to be a recovery center for COVID-19 patients who aren't in the hospital, who maybe aren't as serious. Paul was really concerned, along with other advocates, that this is pretty disruptive to a vulnerable population to move people. Of these nursing home residents were scheduled to be moved into a nursing home in Salem. Since I wrote that story, these two nursing homes, one was in Wilmington and the other was in central Massachusetts somewhere, I forget where, it's all been basically put on hold because they tested all these residents before they moved them, and a lot of them did test positive, so this whole idea was put on old, but in addition to that plan, just the situation in many nursing homes around the state is getting really serious. And as you can imagine, as I was saying, it's a vulnerable population. They're older, they're in close quarters. And I did a story on the Hunt Nursing Home in Damaris, had several positive cases, and one gentleman unfortunately passed away. And I just noticed on their website the other day, they said that a second resident had died also. So these nursing homes, it's a really difficult situation for everybody involved. And it makes it even more difficult, of course, that you know, people aren't allowed to visit for good reason. So these families are in this situation where they're having trouble, you know, finding out what's happening to their loved ones who are in these nursing homes. So we're keeping track of that, but as you can imagine, it's a really tough situation.
It is, and clearly the extra precautions need to be taken, and they have been taken at nursing homes now for weeks now, but a very vulnerable population. I also noticed another story, Paul, you wrote, and it's funny, somebody mentioned this to me the other day about construction projects and so on, and yet it appears that a bunch of I know some construction projects are on hold, but others are on as scheduled, right?
Yes, I did do a stir, and I talked to local officials. For instance, in Beverly, they're they're building a new police station, and they are still doing work on that site. And there's road projects going on in Salem. They're building a new school in Danvers, and this is all allowed under the governor's instructions. That it is considered essential service, like everything else. They need to take these self-distancing measures and make sure that none of the workers are sick and wipe down all the equipment. But it's controversial, too. I know a day after I wrote the story, a pretty large union of construction workers came out against the whole thing and said it's putting the workers at risk. So it's just another area of life where there's this tension between, you know, trying to accomplish something during these times, but obviously the top priority is trying to keep everybody safe.
Exactly. You know, another thing that you wrote a story on comfort foods, and it was, I'm worried about my eating habits here in the last 3 weeks. I think I've been okay, but you know, there was a tendency to relapse into some comfort foods. But I know that, Paul, you would never resort to that piece, but clearly at this time, I think people, you know, are looking for that kind of item. And tell us more about that story.
Right. This was this weekend on Saturday, Hobbs Popcorn in Salem at Salem Willows, which has been around since 1897 and is just very popular. It's been popular for years. And they opened as scheduled for the season. They closed during the winter, so they had their season opening day on Saturday, and I spoke with the owner, Charlie Hodge, and he said about 500 people showed up, and there was a long line down the Willows all the way from one end down from the popcorn stand down to the arcade. And so I went over there yesterday, and there were about 25 people in line when I was there. And so this is something that's allowed. It's you can do takeout. That's in the category of essential services. And in Hobbs, you know, Charlie Hobbs did say that some people criticized the business online for the decision to open, but he felt this obligation from he's fourth generation family that runs this business, and he said that his father, grandfather, even great grandfather always opened during World War One and World War Two during the Depression. He sort of felt that obligation. He marked off spots on the sidewalk outside his business 6 feet apart, so people standing in line would stay apart. When I was there yesterday, people were observing that. A lot of people had masks on, but it's still this surreal situation with this pandemic, and you look out, and if you went there Saturday, you'd see, hundreds of people waiting in line to get a bag of popcorn.
Yeah, you never know what works and what doesn't work in this time of business. Here you got a seasonal business like Hobbs Popcorn, and you think, oh my gosh, these guys are in trouble, but they're lining up to go in there at this point.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah,
it is really crazy. Actually, I was telling people that it's the first time. I mean, that's the first story. I think this has been about 2 weeks I've been at home. That's the first story where I actually went out there. I felt like I needed to go talk to somebody, and I put on one of those homemade masks that my daughter made for me, bandana, and I'm interviewing a woman from like 10 feet away with a mask on, and she could hardly understand what I was saying, So yeah. It's just the times we live in, right? That was one of those strange situations.
You know, and when you wear those, if you want to smile at somebody, you can't. They don't know you're smiling or not. You know what I mean? So,
I know.
Hey, last thing, Paul Layton from the Salem News, is you also wrote a brief story on Beverly Farms businesses and a group together to help support Beverly Farms businesses. I'm assuming there's those small businesses up, coming out of Beverly, up in the Beverly Farms areas. Are those the ones that the organization is looking to support?
Yes, the ones in those two neighborhoods, Beverly Farms and Pride's Cross. And, stories on all these efforts where people are coming together and trying to help out. And I did one story on a local photographer went around and took pictures of people on their front steps, and in exchange, she just asked them to donate to Beverly Bootstraps. It's an effort that's been going on around the country, really. It's spread. And so you see a lot of situations where people banding together and trying to help each other. So those are sort of the good news parts of this. There's been lots of stories on people making masks and there's a volunteer organization on the North Shore. Of a lot of them are retired nurses and medical professionals, and they're helping out. They've had volunteers to man this call center that's been set up in PV where people can call and ask questions. So I guess that's the good side. People are banding together and trying to help out as much as they can. Just from talking to people, the ones who do volunteer, they all say they feel kind of helpless, when you're sitting at home and you see doctors and nurses and grocery store clerks and delivery people and all the people, as they say, that are on the front lines, still doing their job. They're people like me, we're kind of lucky that we can work from home and still get paid, we have been able to write those types of stories also, and I feel that's important to get that sort of good news out in these times as well.
Yeah, there's so many of those stories, and it's great to read about them and see them in the papers. So Paul, always good talking with you. Thanks. Stay safe and be well, and thanks for your time.
Okay, Bill. Always great to talk to you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Paul Layton from the Salem News with us here on Connections.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
All right, back now with Kate Fox. She's the executive director of Destination Salem. And Kate, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm working remotely. I'm guessing you're working remotely as well.
I am. I am in my new office in my kitchen. It's nice and sunny. I've got some nice plants to look at. So making the best of a bad situation.
All right. I know. Boy, that's the truth. I've been able to keep up with things sort of in Salem by talking with Mayor Driscoll. She's been kind enough to talk with us, but not in the in the same focus that Destination Salem has. And I think the first thing I'd like to do, obviously, I want to pick your brain and find out what you're suggesting and so on about the stay-at-homes, what's open, what's closed. But I want to refer people to salem.org, because you have just an immense amounts of an immense. Let me try that again. You got a lot of stuff there about what's open and what's closed in Salem on a blog site. So maybe we could start there. Tell us a little bit about how to get information from your website.
Sure. So first, I hope everybody listening is safe and well and hunkering down at home, as we've been instructed to do. In light of that, a lot of the businesses in Salem have stepped up to be able to bring Salem to your home. So there are, on salem.org, we have, if you go to salem.org/blog, you'll find several different pages. One is virtual experiences in Salem. So, for example, Joe's Fish Prints is doing online fish printing, or teaching people how to do fish printing at home with the supplies that he thinks you have in your house. I think that Joe might have high expectations for what I have in my house. But
yep.
There are also virtual field trips. The Peabody Essex Museum has been doing a story time for toddlers and young kids through their Pen Pals program. There are coloring books. You can go through the digital photograph collections at Salem State. Salem Witch Museum is doing an online book club. So there's lots of information about the different attractions in Salem, and also through the Essex Heritage. They're doing Essex Heritage Online Heritage at Home program, so some regional information as well there. We also have a list of on the blog of businesses that are offering takeout, curbside delivery, and just delivery to your homes, so retail and restaurants. And that includes this week, the Easter Bunny is making chocolate delivery, so you can go through Salem Food Tours and request the chocolate delivery from a local chocolate shop or candy shop in Salem delivered by the Easter Bunny, and that has been doing really well, and I mean, how much fun for families and kids to have the Easter Bunny show up at their door from a safe distance, deliver chocolate that you've ordered from Harbor Sweets or Yale Pepper Candy or Turtle Alley, and he's been, I've seen pictures of the Easter Bunny on the slide in the backyard, or running around the street with an umbrella. So that's a fun opportunity for families looking to entertain their kids. Then we do have a COVID-19 page that links back to Salem.com and also lists all the businesses that are closed. And of course, any non-essentials are closed, so that's pretty much everybody except for the groceries and restaurants. And we are posting a list of the houses of worship that are doing virtual services for Easter and Holy Week. So that's up there now as well.
This is amazing, Kate. It really is. And one of the things we were talking about before you went on the air, I know that what we've been doing, we have been supporting our local restaurants by going and getting takeout at least once or twice a week. And I like to think of myself as a fairly generous tipper. I mean, I don't have a lot of money, but I want to take care of waitstaff. And I'm even more cognizant of that now than ever before. In the past, if I went to pick up a takeout often, I wouldn't leave a tip at all. But now I'm leaving the requisite 20%, even though you go in, you pick up a bag, and you leave. You're not getting waited on. But I think that's just my little way of feeling, okay, maybe I can do something. But I know that in Salem, aside from takeout, there are other things that people can do. The other thing, Kate, I'm thinking that most of the donations come in the way of monetary gifts, like online, I'm guessing. But what's your take on all of this?
Yeah, so there are a couple of different organizations locally. There's a group called Behind You, behindyouinc.org, that supports food service employees in crisis, and they've pivoted to be able to address all the employees who are out of work because of coronavirus. You can support North Shore Medical Center, Salem Hospital. They have a page on their website about how to help with donations. Salem, the mayor has set up Salem Together, which is a page on salem.com, and it's all the different ways you can support the people in need, organizations in need, everybody who needs support to get through the crisis. It's really an opportunity to come together as a community while staying apart and make sure we all get through this together. I'm in there with the tipping. We've been very generous as well. And one thing I've learned is some of the restaurants, it's a longer wait time because most of them are working with skeleton crews. So
right.
I've learned to order, give them a lot of time.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing is
great.
Yeah. And when you go to pick it up, you got to give a lot of time there, too, because, there's one or two people ahead of you, and it's going to take a little while to get your stuff, for sure.
Yeah, but I appreciate the restaurant too. Everybody who's, the goal is to get through this, and the economic effect, I don't want to be a downer, but the economic effect of this healthcare crisis is potentially catastrophic, and, there are a lot of scary reports coming out, and so we just need to support each other to get our communities through as best we can.
Yes, and for some people, it's easier than others, and some of these businesses, I'm afraid, are not going to come back online, and I know that will be a major focus of all cities and towns once this thing passes. Kate, is there anything else that you'd like to mention?
To reiterate what I hear out of the medical community is this will end. There will be a new day, and we'll be able to come out of our houses and be together, and I look forward to welcoming people back to Salem in person, and also to be able to go out and explore the region myself. So I hope everybody hangs in there and stays well.
Well, I found something that, hit the right button with me, and it was some advice on, de-stressing and just taking it easy during all this stuff and mentally. And one of the things it said, make plans. Look to the future. Make plans. And that helped me. So I'm doing that. I think there's going to be a lot of parties down the road here somewhere.
I know, not virtual. I have seen some reports that show that people are booking travel for November, December. I'm hoping that's going to include October. For a lot of our businesses, there's an article that came out over the weekend about tourism in Cape Cod and the impact on the summer travel season that the epidemic's going to have. But, for Salem and for a lot of New England, it's fall. We need the leaf keepers. We need the October travelers, the haunted happenings visitors. And that's key to the business survival. So I hope we're far enough out that we're going to be able to have fun with everybody, and maybe we'll be decorating with masks.
I like your voice of optimism. I love it, and I think we're going to be fine, Kate. Hey, listen, you and your family and your staff stay safe, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, Kate. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. That is Kate Fox, who is the executive director of Destination Salem with MSO. All right, we're back now with Sarah Bartley, who is the Senior Director of Community Impact at United Way of Massachusetts Bay and Merrimack Valley. Sarah, welcome to MSO.
Thank you very much.
Well, obviously, most people are working from home. Are you able to do that as well?
I am, yeah. Really fortunate to be able to work from home and stay connected to people while obviously it's really important that we all stay home.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, prior to my reading about the collaboration in Lynn on the Daily Item involving United Way, Massachusetts Bay, Merrimack Valley, I had never heard of that part of United Way. So maybe you could fill me in a little bit about what your organization is, where it's located, and so on.
Yeah, so United Way does have offices on the North Shore as well as in Boston, in the Merrimack Valley, and a couple of other regions. United Ways are nonprofit organizations. We're incorporated locally, but we're a brand a lot of people have heard of because we are actually an international organization. But we do incorporate locally, and so we have a local office, which really is working to benefit people in need across our region, which for us is a lot of eastern Massachusetts, including all those communities. So Lynn is a really important community to us. It is a community that we have connected with in a couple of ways that I can talk about for a lot of years. So just for example, we partner with the Lynn Public Schools on an AmeriCorps program, which places tutors and AmeriCorps members to teach and tutor English language learners in the schools and in after-school programs. We also are a funder to a lot of early education, childcare, after-school programs, as well as programs that try to help people build their financial well-being. So we do quite a bit of things, but as we're primarily a funder of nonprofits, maybe people haven't heard of us, but we're really glad that you're hearing of us now, and we are really committed to the City of Lynn. So we're really excited to be able to announce the Lynn Community Care Fund as an opportunity to further mobilize people to support their neighbors.
When you say you're a funder of nonprofits, what's exactly does that mean, Sarah? In other words, what's your role in this? Yeah. What's the United Way's role in it? How does it work?
Yeah, so United Way, you can think of us as a mobilizer of resources. So we unite people to work together to help people in need. And so United Way traditionally has run day campaigns to really mobilize those resources, volunteers and advocacy and support, as well as funds. And then we work with nonprofit partners on the ground to deploy those funds to help people. And so in the case of, for example, we've had a family fund in place for decades, which aims to provide emergency financial assistance to people. We've been distributing that in Lynn through Leo and Catholic Charities and others for many years. And so, we really took that and expanded it as soon as this COVID-19 crisis knew that we sort of looked down the road a couple weeks and knew that that there would be a pretty quickly there would be a need as people were laid off or lost hours for people to just get help paying bills, getting access to food and other kind of basic necessities. And so, you know, we recognize that there are a lot of people in the city, as in every city, who will lose hours during this crisis or may lose a job because they don't have childcare. And so we very quickly figured out we needed to mobilize that fund and expand it in order to mobilize more people to give generously so that, those funds would be available hours and still needing to pay their rent and get food.
How? But so let me get this right. It basically what happens is if people are in need, they go to their local communities inland, and it might be a United Way symbol or something like that, but you support the nonprofits that support the people. Is that how it works?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Yeah, so we support the nonprofits, and then we also are providing funds to be able to support people as well.
Oh, okay. All right. So, how do people contribute on the North Shore? I'm gathering you really can't go into places. You can't volunteer to work in person. There's got to be a way to do it online.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, if people have hours to give, I'm sure that there are ways that people can do that. We'd gather and try to disseminate those. But you're right. One of the things that makes this particular crisis so difficult is that it can be hard to figure out how to contribute. You know, not everybody can volunteer. Some of us who maybe want to volunteer are in high-risk groups and probably shouldn't, right? And then others just don't know how because maybe they're newly available but have never done it before. So we're hearing from – there are groups that still need volunteers who can operate safely, you know, delivering Meals on Wheels or in other kinds of services like that. You know, it's not to say – I certainly don't want to say that nobody needs volunteers. There certainly are still needs out there. But – it is hard right now. I mean, it's hard for a lot of people to volunteer. And so one way that we, you know, certainly say you can contribute if you, you know, think especially for those who maybe haven't been deeply financed, to go to UnitedWayMassBay.org. There is a drop-down menu for COVID-19, and the Lynn Community Care Fund is one of the options. So we are both fundraising to support families in Lynn from across the region. We're not just fundraising in Lynn, we're fundraising all over our region to try to support people in lots of communities, including Lynn. But there's also a Lynn Community Care page where, you know, people who really want to give to help their neighbors in Lynn can, and 100% of those contributions will go to support people in Lynn.
Fantastic. And finally, Sarah, are there other programs that you could mention either up in the Merrimack Valley or elsewhere around the North Shore that, you know, United Way has made an impact on? Other programs, other things that people have helped people?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I'm happy to talk about any number of them. So, you know, I can stay in Lynn or I could talk a little bit more generally. We do have partners in lots of other cities as well, including Lawrence and Lowell and Salem. You know, maybe just one in particular that would be helpful to know about is the AmeriCorps program I mentioned earlier. Our members work not only in Lynn, but also in Salem and Gloucester. They're in the public schools and they're in after-school programs and they're supporting families. And they continue to support families now, even though school is out. They continue to support families. And one kind of neat thing that's happened in recent days, so our members, while schools are closed and, you know, they're still working to support families, schools are closed. A lot of them have are also supporting our 211 network. We'd love for people to know about that. So United Way also has a call center for comprehensive information and referral called 211. It's a program of your local United Way. And anyone who is looking for assistance right now or has questions related to the COVID-19 crisis can call 211 or visit mass211.org and chat to someone right on the website. They can provide comprehensive information and referral. They've been getting tens of thousands of phone calls since this started from people all over the state who have questions and concerns. We've put some of the top 10 questions people have been asking up on our website, but people can also call them to try to get some information that they and referral that they need. And we are keeping them up to date with which agencies, both in Lynn and beyond, have funds that we've been raising so that if there are funds at a local agency near them that they could potentially qualify for, they will refer them to those resources.
Wow, wow, great work. Awesome. Yeah, that's what I was after. Now, finally, Sarah, last time, do it again for me, please. Best way, let's say, best way for people to contribute monetarily. What's the easiest way for them to do it?
Yeah, go to UnitedWayMassBay.org. Look for the COVID-19 drop.
You do want to get out there, Sarah?
Yeah, I would say that this crisis really is big for people. You know, we know that a crisis like this really, really disproportionately impacts people who maybe were already financially struggling before. So if you were already sort of working an hourly, you know, a job where you were already part-time, if you were experiencing homelessness before, man, we know that this crisis is going to hit you especially hard. And so we really want to make sure that if anybody is able to support their neighbors, that they do so, because we know that that this crisis is going to be hard for people, and they're going to need support. That 211 line, you can call if you just need someone to talk to. You know, the agencies that we're going to be contributing funds to, they want to hear from you. We know that this is really, really a difficult time for people. It's a difficult time for families, and so we just want people to know that we are behind you. We are pulling for you, and we're here to support you.
That is Sarah Bartley, Senior Director of Community Impact at United Way of Massachusetts Bay and Merrimack Valley. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
All righty, my thanks to Sarah Brantley, of course, Bartley, rather, also to Paul Layton, Salem News writer, and, of course, to Kate Fox over at Destination Salem. And we're going to bring back live now Bill Newell, Josh Arnold. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Rick.
Josh, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good morning, everybody.
All righty. I mean, I don't know where to even begin, guys, because it's another week. I don't know. I've heard a little bit of hope here in some of the interviews today, this morning, and also I think last night was some of the news that we've been looking at, and also today as well. There seems to be we're reaching an inflection point where we begin the turnaround, hopefully. But I don't know, Bill. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it does seem as if there are some states. Massachusetts might be one of them. New York State might be another one of them, where the curve is flattening. So that means that you have a few days of data where it's not going up. It's not going down yet either, according to what I'm seeing. But it's kind of unofficial. They will all tell you that people that follow this stuff, that 2-3 days doesn't make a trend. You need a little bit more than that. But I still think that ultimately what we heard a week or two ago about this week and next week being very difficult, I'm sure that that still continues as other parts of the country kind of spike. So the isolation, the social distancing still continues for sure for a while.
Josh? I think it's interesting to see what's happening at the state and local level across the country in terms of responding to that. In between, Governor Cuomo came out and said, we're going to fine people $1,000. He says, not because we're trying to get the money, but because we want to drive home the point. You still need to practice social distancing. He said he was upset to drive through and saw people at the beach, people at the at parks playing basketball and stuff. He said, that's not what we're doing here. We still have to keep our distances. I understand it's a good day and all of that. And you have some other cities and towns are clicking it up a notch with curfews. New Hampshire governor cut out all Airbnbs and said, I can't put people at the border, but I can make it difficult for people to visit right now. So lots of people are doing lots of things to try to make sure that we stay the ground. And I don't know what's going to happen in Wisconsin. I haven't heard the latest. I was following that till about midnight last night, and then I went to sleep. But the last I knew that the Wisconsin Supreme Court had overruled the governor and said that they were going to have the election. Did the U.S. Supreme Court take it up? Do we know?
I don't know.
I haven't okay. heard that. I wouldn't even know that it would go to the Supreme Court.
It would seem like a rush thing for it to happen, but I know that the Supreme Court was going to take up, was considering a piece of it where the the deadline to send people were sending in a
for the Campbell family until they got.
I'm sorry. I just I'm sorry for the music, but when you asked me that question, Josh, I went online and I found a quick article here. But
go ahead.
So you have Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who's a Democrat, called Tuesday's primary election a S show. Long lines were forming at polling places, and the state fought to postpone the election amid the coronavirus pandemic. So what the issue here, though, Josh, is, I don't know if you mentioned it or not, but the governor just postponed it yesterday, right? I mean, it was yesterday. He said, no, we're not doing this election. I think everyone's known this election's been happening for months and years, to be quite honest with you. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the question was, people who wanted to vote by mail, if they didn't get the because the bureaucracy wasn't able to respond to the request in time, I think the U.S. Supreme Court was going to consider taking up whether or not those votes counted or not, and I'll have to go in and check it. I was reading something last night, and then, as I said, I dozed off, but... it was a real page turner, you can tell. But,
yeah, there you go.
Bill, you got a post up there that I saw last night on some good news with John Kassian, it cracked me up. Very good news. And a couple of good stories. I think Paul Layton mentioned one. There are photographers, professional photographers all over the North Shore now, who are raising money for the local food pantries by taking pictures of families on their porches. The photographers don't get near the families, but I think, like in Gloucester, it's, I believe, a $15 fee. A couple of people in Gloucester are going around doing that, including, if I can find his name here, and of course I can't, but Jason Grow is one of them. Oh, okay, Jason Grow and Bill Summer. And Paul was mentioning, I think, in Beverly and Salem. And another quick note, guys, also in Gloucester, there's a family that has donated several thousand masks to Edison Gilbert Hospital. So the good stories are continuing.
Did you happen to catch the story that the bureaucrat in New York City who had essentially leaked a story about a contingency plan for temporary internment, and he came up at the governor's press conference and he said, I've heard a lot of crazy rumors, but that's not one of them. Let's find out about that. And as the day went on yesterday, then the mayor of New York City came out and said, no, there's not an instance where that's being strongly considered. If we have an internment problem, we'll deal with it, but it won't be that. We're not going to put them in any public parks. And then by, I think, 8 o'clock last night, the person who made the initial claim was walking it back and trying to put it back in the tube as though it was just a possibility.
No, hadn't heard that one.
Okay, here's a little more local story. We mentioned it in our North Shore Today newscast. By the way, what Rick was referring to, the John Krasinski good news video. He's done two of them now. One just came out yesterday. We just posted it today on North Shore Today. The former Office star. From The Office.
Jack Ryan. Jack Ryan, too.
What's that?
He's also Jack Ryan on in Prime.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that one. I just know him as, oh, man. What's his name on The Office?
I never saw The Office. I never saw it, Bill. I've never even seen an episode. So when I saw John Krasinski in that car commercial recognizing him as Jack Ryan, then I realized how he starred in The Office for, what, like 10 years?
Oh, yeah, Jim. It's Jim from The Office. Well,
okay.
Anyways, here's the story that I was referring to. I mentioned it in North Shore today, but it's from the front page of the item. Basically, it's the Lynn superintendent of schools saying he doesn't think students are going to return to the schools this year. However, that doesn't mean they won't be learning. They've also maybe apparently working on budgets to get people students, and this would be a major budget issue somehow hooked up technically, because there are many disadvantages in the city of Lynn that do not have laptops or devices or whatever that might, Chromebooks, whatever the most cost-effective way of getting online and doing coursework would be. But apparently that's the move that they're going to try to be making in Lynn. And again, with the understanding, and I get it, you know, how do you bring kids back into school into a clouded classroom with 30 kids in a classroom after just going through this. It, you know, I see it. You know, who knows what'll happen?
Yeah, I think
that's passing this on as a as one of our news notes.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big story in all the communities, Bill, that we'll have to follow.
It's a developing story, and I think that it's going, you know, both the front end of the crisis and the back end, the front end being, do we need to use relief money to make sure that everybody has a laptop or some device in which they can be educated? Is that going to be the new norm? And what is the, you know, what is, how does that roll out? And I think you're going to see big changes in education, both at the local level and at the collegiate level, the post-secondary. Lots of things are going to change as a result of us eventually getting through this crisis.
All right, we have to change gears here, guys. We've got to go to our next interview, so hold on one second, please, and we'll come back as Josh will be talking with Afroz Khan, who is the Newburyport City Councilor. And this is Connections on MSO.
MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Like Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury, the Bradford Tavern in Rowley. Just like us, they care about the North Shore. Check out all of our podcasts and share our website with your friends. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Again, we are your connection to the best of the North Shore. msonewsports.com.
Welcome back to Connections. Our guest is Afroz Khan, who is a city councilor in Newburyport. Afroz, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, everybody's dealing with some aspect of the health crisis. Tell us how it hits you and how it's impacted you at your in your role as a city councilor, and I know that you had some meetings that you had to do online last night, and maybe you could share some of what happened there with us.
Yes, no, thank you so much for asking. As everyone else is going through in this whole, I guess in the whole country, we are learning day by day on how to deal with COVID-19. From so many perspectives, as a parent, as a physician, or whatever your job may be, as a city councilor, it's been another kind of level for me personally, and I think other councilors or other town officials. We have, as soon as Governor Baker gave the directive that open meeting laws could be relaxed to do remote meetings for people like boards and commissions and city councilors, we immediately met. I think on March 16th, we had a special meeting of the city council here in Newburyport to adopt policies for remote participation. So while we were allowed to do remote participation for city council business, we still didn't have any policies to work around. So we acted pretty quickly here to implement how that was going to work, to make sure that we only took up essential items and time-sensitive items and put on hold anything that required public hearings. So, we did have a meeting last night as you and I were kind of corresponding. One of the things that has happened is, again, the governor issued kind of some directives that were advised to be implemented, such as, gatherings of 10 or greater people to not really happen outdoors or in indoor spaces, Well, one of the things that in Newburyport, as the weather is getting really nice, there have been the social distancing aspect that's so critical to flattening this curve is not really being, I don't want to say it's not being taken seriously, but I think there's a lot of lack of understanding on what that truly means. And, you know, we all have kids that want to be outside, especially when you have a 60-degree day like we are having today, and we're definitely going to have some really good weather. Newburyport is kind of known for, you know, we have an amazing rail trail. We are located right by, we have a beach. So, but unfortunately, given the situation with COVID-19, we met through a special meeting because three counselors introduced an ordinance, and we actually, we had a 3.5-hour meeting at 7:30, and then ended up postponing to Wednesday night at 11 p.m. after deliberating for hours on where we couldn't really get alignment on the details of the ordinance. And really what it's doing is we're actually trying to give a little bit more, I guess, more power to authority figures like the police to actually find people if they are congregating in larger groups. There seems to be a lot of residents concerned about block parties still happening. And that's kind of what we're dealing with day to day is, you know, most infringing upon people's just their civil rights or civil liberties to do what they want when you start trying to codify distance and closing parks and saying, no, you cannot go and shoot a basketball, even if you're by yourself, over in a public park.
Boston Mayor Marty Walsh had imposed a curfew for residents of Boston. Is that something Newburyport has entertained or considering, or how is that part of what you discussed last night? Or,
well, it did come up, but more in a very negative way. I think some of the councilors who felt like we were taking this too far, they're going to have a curfew like Boston does. So, you know, our intention is not to kind of restrain or to create anything that's going to be hard for people. I think, but then that's the balance we're trying to walk. At this point, I don't know if a curfew is needed, but Josh, I am concerned, you know, about really, I think we're in a critical time here in the next 2 weeks. And we, yeah. I kind of see it like maybe without having some severity of the situation kind of brought to light, that people still are maybe taking this a little bit too casually. So, and my husband is also a physician who is, and that's a perspective I get daily. You know, I'm kind of quarantined with him, although he does go into the hospital. And he is now, you know, being in the special gastroenterology, he's actually being asked to go and support and provide some help at a respiratory clinic. So a lot of people are doing things that normally they would not have done. And that was kind of the arguments I was trying to make last night in favor of in favor of the ordinance we had before us, is that, yes, people are going to be uncomfortable, but unfortunately we are in a time where, you know, businesses are being asked, we're asked to close if they're non-essential. And I don't think we've seen that before. School closures, this is the longest school closure I've seen in my whole life of going to school. So I think we are in an unusual time, but I pray that it's just a short time period. The ordinance we had put there was to really just be into effect till May 4th, hoping that by May 4th, can we really accomplish a lot.
Well, I was trying to remember if I could come up with anything where there had been that kind of a school closure. And I, if memory serves me, I think it was 1969, we went to school eight or nine days in the month of February, because we had those incredible snowstorms. And of course, you know, I had February vacation, wrapped in there. But this is, it is a long period of time for, kids to be home and for everybody to be home. And, how is that going to impact, or how is that impacting the way education is delivered in Newburyport and other places? And what do you see as the rollout of that, Ethan, for the short term or long term?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's a really good point you're bringing up. And one of the things, as a city councilor, I'm on two committees, and one of them is the education committee. And we did actually have a meeting last night as well at 5:30, where we talked with the superintendent, and we got an update from the superintendent on how remote learning is being implemented. And the Department of Education from the state has given a lot of guidance and has been doing a lot of remote calls with superintendents, and as well as with other the other kind of learning teams out there. And we got a really, I have to say, I was really impressed with the level of support and the level of tools that are being provided to educators on how they could keep the students going in terms of a remote learning capacity, while also being mindful of a lot of the emotional stress that the kids are also facing. And I was really, I have to say, I thought that, you know, one of the things that I actually did not know this till last night, you know, the MCAS testing, which is statewide, there is discussion about canceling that, and one of the things that will be, I think, announced shortly is whether or not that's going to be truly canceled, and I think that's still being decided by the commissioner, but once that directive comes through, there is still going to be a way that they're going to gauge whether students can, should they be doing summer school, basically, and so what teachers are doing through remote capacities, and if anyone is struggling and doesn't have the way to participate, were provided with Google Chromebooks being provided and anything that they needed to be able to do this remote learning. But the gauge is going to be if students are just responding to teachers. Are they turning in assignments or, you know, through a Google Classroom? And if some are not participating, they're actually reaching out and trying to say, you know, well, what's preventing you? How could we support you? And I was really impressed by the numbers of participation remotely. The superintendent reported that there was about 7% of non-participants, and that they're reaching out and slowly addressing each of the issues they're having. So that's kind of how I see it, is that remote learning is a new space, but a lot of the educators and as well as the state level are providing the support to help make this happen.
You know, and you may not know the answer to this, but I'll throw it out there because it occurred to me when you were talking. So I'm a student, and I'm having trouble with algebra, and there are no side comments from Rick Moore, who had me as a teacher in high school back a few years ago.
No comment.
But you know, I need some extra help in algebra too. Is there going to be some tutoring capability that schools are going to be able to provide, or is that up to the parents to find somebody who can tutor me or tutor a student? Has that come up in discussion at all?
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. I would say, even personally, I have an eighth grader as well as a fifth grader. And the way I see, I think it's being handled is it's by teams of teachers. So as teachers are working with their students, and I'm very grateful that they've had more than half a year of education time with kids, that they have already kind of instituted methods and ways to, through the Google Classrooms and Zoom. I have to say the Zoom platform has been wonderful, and it's been provided to a lot of educators in Newburyport, and I'm sure over the state, that there have been kind of these little group assistance sessions happening. In fact, my daughter's on one right now where they kind of color-coded students based on, okay, and you don't even know what it's based on, but they created the color coding, and they have those groups working together. So I do feel like it's an individual space type of approach, but I have to say from my perspective as a parent of a fifth grader and an eighth grader who are some of those that need assistance, that is being provided through this platform.
That's great. Well, that's certainly beneficial. And anything else that came up at either the education or the city council that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I think, you know, it's not been easy, Josh. I won't fib. Last night's 3.5-hour meeting was exhausting. And we really, you know, it came down to this. We are asking that more that enforcement be more, I guess, tighter on groups and dispersing groups are getting together. Now, it did be unfortunate because some of the discussion was, do you ask a group to prove that they're family members? Do you, how does one approach somebody and a group with civility and not being so angry with each other? Do we put our law enforcement folks at risk by maybe getting into an altercation with groups when you do ask them to no longer hang out? So, I mean, those are the real issues that we talked about last night. And unfortunately, this COVID-19 situation has put us in a place where we are going to be uncomfortable and asking for things that sound kind of surreal and just something you never thought you'd have to go and say, yeah, prove that you guys are related, you know, so, or living in the same house or so. Yeah. So those were a lot of our discussions. So we are continuing the conversation tomorrow night. We have, we actually voted to postpone. And so we're going to be resuming conversations on this ordinance tomorrow night at 7:30. Again, we're using Zoom, and we are hoping to come up with some type of an ordinance to codify enforcement.
What is the dynamic like for you? And can you give a sense of how the citizenry is receiving it? I mean, it's different than you show up at town hall and you raise your hand and you want to speak. I know mechanically or logistically it's not the same thing. And is there concern that, gee, I don't have a computer. I'm not going to get to voice in, weigh in on this. How is that being handled or dealt with or discussed?
You know, that's actually a really good point that you just brought up. And that's been some of the pushback in terms of using this kind of remote capacity of conducting our city council work. You know, you don't have during debate, you can't see people. And during public comment, yeah, if someone does not have a computer, they cannot probably participate in our meeting. We tried to see if the Zoom function could actually be broadcasted on our local, community network here in Newburyport, and that is not in place yet. So I think you bring up some really kind of risky factors as we make some kind of really key important decisions. Now, in terms of council, the council deliberating and debating, have a hand raise kind of function. So for all of us councilors, there's 11 of us. You know, I've actually found this to be it's been working well today in using this forum. We did have public comment. And so the way Zoom is, there's a room where all the public sit in, kind of a virtual room, and the council president can go in there and unmute participants when they raise their hand to speak. Again, I'm talking only for those who can have the luxury to kind of log in and participate. We did say, you know, if you have anything to say, you could also email the counselors. But one of the pushback was we actually called that special meeting, the one that was held yesterday, that was called that day. So one of the pushbacks from some of the counselors, and I definitely understood it, is some of the public don't even know we're talking about this. And all of a sudden, we're going to say we're going to fine you $125 if you're kind of congregating. So that was a tough situation to be in, that we had to meet so quickly on a public safety issue. But within our charter, we had the right to do that. So, no, very good points you're bringing up.
Two last points. One is, if I'm in Gloucester and I wanted to go to a... can I do that?
You could participate. It's public information. So
yeah.
If you could definitely participate, just like if you wanted to drive over to Newburyport and participate. It's just that if you were to speak, every single person who speaks must give their address. That's
okay.
The first thing.
Right.
They state their name and they state their address. And then they are allowed
to. So the moment I say I'm from Indiana, I'm out.
We've had people speak before. Can you hear me? I don't know if I'm cutting in.
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
But go on. Sorry.
So the other thing that observation I made is that, gee, when you're in person and someone gets up and makes a really important point, and the audience cheers and claps and everything, that cheering and clapping sometimes sways council to vote in a particular way that maybe when they came in, they weren't planning to vote. I'm guessing that that dynamic doesn't exist in Zoom.
It certainly does not. And I have to tell you, having had really painful discussions on marijuana and some other topics, I really admire some council presidents in other cities who have actually, before a very sensitive topic is talked about, will actually tell people to please refrain from clapping, applauding. This is not a sports event that they're at. And to be honest, as a counselor who's sitting in a chair where my back is actually to the public, I sometimes find it very, it could be very also aggressive, and I don't see it in a positive way, to be honest. And I, even if I support an issue and the majority of people in the room support it, I don't like that clapping. I don't like that, you know, that cheering. And I really do applaud our council president, who does hit the gavel when things get. I keep saying
that would be Jared Eichermann.
Yes, that would be Jared Eichermann, our council president.
Right. Well, thank you for taking time out of your busy day and sharing with us what's happening in Newburyport. Lots of good information, and as always, it's a pleasure to have you be a call-in guest on Connections.
Oh, well, thank you so much for inviting me. I always enjoy your show, so it's a pleasure to be part of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. This has been Connections. Thank you, Afros Khan, Newburyport City Council, to Josh Arnold, Bill Newell, of course, Bill Proposky, our producer and engineer. Also, I'd like to mention our thanks to Paul Layton for stopping by today, talking with Bill, Sarah Bartley, who is the Senior Director of Community Impact for the Mass Bay. It's called Massachusetts Bay. United Way, Massachusetts Bay and Merrimack Valley, and also to Kate Fox of Destination Salem. We'll be back on Thursday, so stay with us. Comments you'd like to pass along, suggestions, whatever, send them along to msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. The MSO News staff, I'm Rick Moore. Have a great day, be safe, and do the right thing.